339-1140, 1-800-920-1140. You can text us at 40-411-40. A busy show. Thanks to Alex Pavlovich joining us from Philadelphia, talking about the San Francisco Giants. Lindsay Theory of the LA Times is going to come on here in a couple of minutes, and we will talk Los Angeles Rams as we roll through the NFC West and your San Francisco 49ers. Do not fret. We'll follow the Seahawks tomorrow. We'll finish with them on Friday. Nate, before we get to Lindsay and the LA Rams, I don't know. There's a website I'm not sure you're familiar with called Deadspin.
Oh, I've heard of it.
You've heard of it.
Mm-hmm.
Every year, as we get closer to the NFL, they do a series of articles on NFL teams called basically Why Your Team Sucks. And yesterday they did the 2016 San Francisco 49ers. Now, Deadspin is, it can be dramatic and funny, and they're a fine website indeed for the most part. My favorite part of Deadspin is probably the comments. So they did their little write-up. This is Drew McGarry on the 49ers. And spoiler alert, it wasn't good if you're a Niner fan. And then they get to...
Or was it?
Yeah, exactly. Then they get to the viewer comments. And these are from 49er fans that are writing in advance of this article to offer their opinions. I wanted to read a couple before we got to Lindsay here, just to kind of underline where a lot of fans are with the Niners. This is from Arthur, and I'll edit this as much as I can. Jed York was given the 49ers as a 26th birthday gift from his dad. Although one could write a Homeric epic about how feckless of a boob Jed York has revealed himself to be, consider the following. Jed York spent $1.2 billion. You know what? This is so sad, especially for somebody like me who's a giant Niners fan. Where's my sad? There's mm-hmm. my sad right
here. Get it going.
Thank you. There, that's better. Jed York spent $1.2 billion to build a stadium that is unanimously regarded as worse than Candlestick Park. Enough of the laugh track. Raider fan in there. Do you realize how incredible of a feat that is? Attending a Niner game at Candlestick meant standing in raw sewage and somehow coming home with a blistering sunburn and frostbite. Attending a Niner game at Candlestick meant you were always one Tim Rattay fumble away from a blood-soaked melee breaking out in the most expensive seats. Attending a game at Candlestick meant fording a river of bro barf only to be greeted by PODs. Here comes the boom blaring out of the stadium speakers to announce that the Niners defense was about to give up a 95-yard drive composed entirely of four-yard halfback dives. And yet, absolutely everyone agrees the new stadium is far worse, not slightly inconvenient, not marginally less fun, far blanking worse than Candlestick Park. They can't even practice there because the turf is too dangerous to play football on, and that's like the 25th most objectionable thing about it. Levi's Stadium is so awful that season ticket holders with PSLs are straight up refusing to pay for their tickets, which means that Jed York will have to sue his own season ticket holders to get them to go to games.
Yeah.
This is like John Travolta spending $1.2 billion to make a worse movie than Battlefield Earth. If you gave Google, Apple, and NASA $1.2 billion each, they would not be able to build a stadium worse than Candlestick, and they specialize in building god-awful eyesores in Santa Clara. Jed York is the blanking Mozart of feckless ineptitude. Levi's Stadium is his marriage of Figaro. I hope Jed York... Now, I'm not going to say that because he wishes really horrible things on Jed York, but he wants to see the York family in a future Saw movie is how that ends
up.
There are many other comments in here from Niner fans, some of which really compare him. They underline it that as bad as it may seem for 49er fans on and off the field, that Jed York is basically a young, just getting started in this world, Daniel Snyder.
Mm-hmm.
And that 49er fans have absolutely no light at the end of the tunnel.
Nope.
I am a lifelong 49er fan. I try to be as optimistic as I can sometimes. But when you're talking about a quarterback controversy between Colin Kaepernick and Blaine Gabbert, Chip Kelly is your head coach, the wide receiver core led by Torrey Smith. Carlos Hyde, who I love, but who is about as fragile as a...
The only watchable player on that offense.
You're 100% right. And then the defense is Navarro Bowman and Pray for Rain. I mean, you've got a couple. You got the local kid, and then you got the Buckner from... you have Armstead and Buckner, which you hope are going to turn out great. I don't know what to do. I get into it with my fellow Niner fans on Twitter when somebody, hey, how do you think the Niners are going to do this year? And I say, they're horrible.
Why ask?
And you know, hey, well, you know, listen, this and this and that and that. And I understand optimism, but and anything is possible. You have to allow for that. Nobody knows anything. But this is going to be a terrible team with no real bright spots. At no point during the season are 49er fans going to have any illusions or delusions of playoffs. Mm-mm. I don't care how optimistic of a 49er fan you are. Here's my opinion, not fact, opinion. If you believe that this 49er team is going to come anywhere close to 8 games, then you need to seek therapy. Honest to God, because it's just not going to happen. This is so horrible. And it sucks because... A blink of the eye earlier, they were a Super Bowl contender.
Just right there.
They're so bad.
And here we are. I mean, and listen, that's where it gets bad because the money's coming in. The team doesn't have to be good.
Nope.
The guy got his building. It's all done now. And this to me is just like the biggest and really a very good example of what a waste a lot of these brand new stadiums can be when it comes to... Nobody wanted. More often than not, fans don't give a damn about a new building. I mean, if it wasn't for the fact that they would have left town, I think most Kings fans would be just fine in Sleep Train Arena until that thing falls to the ground.
Yeah.
The only reason we started complaining is because we knew our team was in danger. That was it, right? Fans don't care about this. They would just as soon go to Candlestick Park and watch a freaking football game standing in raw sewage than have to travel to Santa Clara and deal with this monstrosity. So you force people to pay for something that they don't want, and then when you give them a crappy product and they say, dude, you're not holding up your end of the bargain, like now you're going to end up in court with them.
It's really
sad. That's good stuff.
It's really, really sad. And I rooted for Jed York. When things were going well, I said this yesterday, I thought he was... The new Eddie DeBartolo, this is going to be great. Young kid coming in, taking over for his dumb parents and turning things around. Jim Harbaugh, what an awesome move. Everything's great. This Colin Kaepernick guy, oh my goodness gracious. How great is he? Dear Lord.
He's a mutant football player. And then that is exactly what he turned into as a mutant, but he lost all his powers.
From Kevin, the 49er fan. I've lived in the Bay Area for over 6 years now, and I think Raider fans are more pleasant than Niner fans.
Yeah.
Which may, in fact, be very true.
Also another point brought up in this article, too. But, I mean, it's gotten to that point where, I mean, I like the whole deal where, like, at Candlestick, one of the things you deal with is, yeah, I mean, you're one Tim Rattay fumble away from bloody melee breaking out in the expensive seats. But, hey, that's kind of fun, though, right?
Well, we'll get back into the Niners on Friday. Right now, our stop in the NFC West is in Los Angeles for the brand-new L.A. Rams. Bottom line is, who cares about any potential problems with the Rams? Because Los Angeles has a football team back, and that's quite a big deal if you're in Southern California. Joining us right now from the L.A. Times to give us the lowdown on all things Ram, it is Lindsay Theory. Lindsay, I'm Dave. That's Nate across from me. Thanks for joining us this morning. How are you?
Thanks for having me, guys. Doing well. Just in the middle of the training camp grind.
Well, and here's the thing. You got the grind, and it was so weird. Now, there's no love lost between us here in Sacramento, for the most part, and Los Angeles. That aside, Lindsay, it was always one of the weird things in sports that the number two market in the country went so long without the biggest sport in the country, the NFL. Is the hype, is the excitement, is the buzz in Los Angeles what you think it should be for the return of the NFL?
You know, Los Angeles is such a different city that sometimes it's really hard to gauge, you know, exactly how hyped up the city is. There's so much going on here. I know people probably roll their eyes thinking, oh, they say that in Los Angeles all the time. But I will say that Saturday, I get my days mixed up with camp. On Saturday when they opened camp, I was pleasantly shocked how many people were lined up to get in those doors 90 minutes before practice even started. to see the Rams. I mean, they said at the Rams there were more than 10,000 people. I'm not sure if it was that many, but it was pretty crazy to see the reception. But I don't think that we'll really know how much the city's going to embrace the NFL until, you know, week one gets here.
I'm kind of curious, Lindsay, with, you know, you got a new team in town. You guys got USC football, UCLA football, whatever it might be. But, you know, first pro joint in town. How did you guys divvy up the coverage responsibilities at the Times?
That's a good question. We'll find that out pretty soon.
Oh, gotcha.
You know, I know that some folks have shifted beats and that, you know, some priorities have been changed a little bit. But, you know, USC opens camp Thursday, tomorrow. And then UCLA at the beginning of the week. So I think they'll still get coverage. But obviously, you know, NFL is king everywhere.
Okay, because that's what I was just going to ask you. Aside from the fact that the Rams are brand new and they've got, you know, Jared Goff, they got a shiny new quarterback, you know, rank the teams in terms of importance still. USC, UCLA, Los Angeles. You're saying NFL moves right in. They're the king.
Always. NFL is always going to be king.
Like that.
Well, when you look at, speaking of the newly minted quarterback, it's interesting with Jared Goff. From what I understand, Lindsay, in reading, and this could always change, he's working with the second team right now, but it getting instruction after almost every play, and it seems that the prevailing thought is that whether or not he starts game one, this Rams coaching staff is focused on getting him up and ready to go ASAP.
Yeah, you know, at the end of OTAs, he slid in there with the ones, which Jeff Fisher said was going to happen. During camp so far, it's exclusively been with the twos. He gets a lot of instruction after every play, like you said. You know, some people do really feel that he will be the day one starter when they open Monday night up in San Francisco, or Santa Clara, I should say. But I remain a little bit skeptical myself. You know, yesterday when they put pads on, he did have what appeared to be his best practice of camp, only three really full team practices in. So we'll see. I mean, you go through four preseason games, and we'll see if he's ready for that big game on Monday night.
Lindsay Theory of the LA Times joining us on KHTK, breaking down the newly minted Rams of Los Angeles. Lindsay, I did kind of just step all over the honeymoon period here with the Rams, but, you know, Jeff Fisher hasn't exactly blown the doors off of anyone as the Rams coach, no. And he doesn't have a history of making star quarterbacks in the league. So I guess how much time do you think he bought himself in a new place by trading for a project quarterback and moving to Los Angeles?
1 year.
Wow.
Like you said, you know, this team hasn't been in the playoffs in 12 seasons. They haven't had a winning season in 13. You know, Los Angeles, if there's one thing we certainly know, it's consistent that this city is very apathetic toward a team that isn't producing wins and producing wins in an exciting fashion. Mm-hmm. So they don't have much time. And it's kind of the elephant in the room, right? Everyone's excited to have the team. They're excited to get to know who the players are. And then you take a look at the head coach and you realize, wow, this isn't a new beginning for him. He's really got to perform, and his team has to perform this year.
Now, as Lindsay Theory joins us from the LA Times, we're talking Los Angeles Rams, which is still weird to say.
Feels
even
weird, right?
Even though they were
weird
the Los Angeles. Yeah, I mean, it's not like they haven't been the Los Angeles Rams before. It's just weird again. How's Todd Gurley looking? First impressions on him and him looking to build off that rookie year.
Yeah, Todd gets a handful of carries every practice. I think they're kind of easing him into it, but he seems every part of the offensive rookie of the year. You know, he's not only become kind of the face of the franchise, except for Goff out here in L.A., but, you know, practice, everyone's cheering for him. And when he does carry the ball, it absolutely looks very impressive.
You know, and part of the other running back situation, it's just bizarre what's been going on with Trey Mason. No one really seems to know. I mean, he's had some run-ins with the law, but Jeff Fisher said the other day he hasn't talked to him in months. I don't know that there's a lot to share there, Lindsay, but what do you know about that? And is there, I guess, any sort of insight into what's going on?
I mean, there's really not, other than what Jeff Fisher said. I don't think anybody was surprised that he didn't report for camp, since he wasn't out here for the summer workouts as well. You know, I think what Jeff Fisher said, really, though, that they hope the best for him and want the best for him regardless of football, is kind of the important part right now. Obviously, life things happen that are much bigger than what happens when you put on pads and a jersey.
Lindsay Theory joining us of the LA Times. So we talked a little bit about Jeff Fisher, and Jeff Fisher's fate, I think, is going to fall on this offensive line. They've got the whole Jake Long situation they dealt with. Now they look at former number two pick Greg Robinson entering his third season. What's the coaching staff's thoughts on that O-line holding up, and are they sweating a bit?
You know, I don't really know if they're sweating too much. I think offensively their focus has just been so much on talking about the receivers. I think if they're sweating about anything, that really has to be what it is. You know, they're talking about how young that group is and how reliable they're starting to look. But, you know, when you kind of ask the coaching staff again and again what their target is, it's receivers. So I don't know that the offensive line is really something that they're concerned about, or if they are, they certainly aren't letting on about it.
Lindsay, before we let you go, there is one other really big debate going on, and I, you know, follow you on Twitter. I see you on Twitter. It's at Lindsay Theory, by the way. We'll put out the spelling when we let you go. Have you come to a conclusion as to whether or not you're going to post on Instagram or Snapchat?
Yeah, how did I know this is where you're going to preface it? I knew this is exactly where you're going. I don't know. The poll, like, last before I went to sleep late last night, it was like almost 50-50 split. You guys, I can't keep up with all the millennials. I don't know what they want. I don't know what the people want. So if you guys have an answer to that, I'm all ears. But I'll tell you this, I'm not posting on both. I just can't hold three phones, a video camera, and a notepad. It's just going to be too much.
Well, I can tell you Lindsay's poll right now. Instagram, since she went to sleep last night, has pulled ahead 54% to 46% over Snapchat. Now they both have these stories or what. Here's the thing, Lindsay. I'll just tell you. I post on Facebook a couple times a week. It's mostly family stuff. Twitter, I post on constantly. I have an Instagram account, but I'm more of a Twitter guy. I can't, and I don't even know what the hell to do with Snapchat. I always thought Snapchat was for weirdos and stuff to send out pictures. I had no idea that you could do all this stuff with it. So I'm kind of in your ballpark. I you know, in the olden days, and we could just do cave paintings.
Yeah, you know, and people, maybe we have to go with Instagram, even though, you know, with after the Draymond Green situation, Snapchat seems to be the trending topic. I don't know.
That's Lindsay Theory. You can follow her on Twitter at Lindsay, L-I-N-D-S-E-Y. T-H-I-R-Y. You know what? I'm reading your bio. I just want to make sure before I ask you this next question. Okay, so you work for the LA Times. I'm asking you this for a reason. No official affiliation with the team itself, correct? You work for the Times?
No, I work for the LA Times.
Okay,
exactly.
So I feel comfortable, and I didn't want to put you in a tough spot if you work for the team. Are you hearing the same Andrew Siciliano rumors we are as far as radio play-by-play or no? We're hearing that up there. Longtime host of The Red Zone on NFL Sunday Ticket, and I'm seeing things pop up that he may in fact be going and doing some play-by-play down there.
You know, I saw that pop up on Twitter, and funny thing is I saw Andrew and I spoke with him very briefly. He's a very busy man.
Yeah.
Yesterday at training camp, but I don't know the exact answer on that one.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm a Sunday Ticket guy. I love Andrew. I think he does an amazing job, and I will never understand how he can do what he does for 8 hours. It's the same question I ask NASCAR drivers. How do you not go potty during those eight hours?
You guys know he doesn't take a restroom break, right?
That's what he said. I mean, I've had him on the show.
Oh, you better believe him.
He's 100% right. I've had him on the show before and asked him specifically. He says, nope, I deal with my intake of water and this and that. He does not take a bathroom break. And he's on that set for 8 hours straight. So going from that to radio, I don't know. For me personally, that's a step down. But if it's good for him, it's good for him.
He's a pit bull. He'll do it all.
Lindsay, you're awesome.
Thanks, Lindsay.
You so much for your time.
Guys, thank you.
All right, take care. Hey, who? If you're in LA, you know what? Do you care? You got what's the not moratorium? What's the grace period on the Rams?
It sounded like a year. I love that she just used the term apathy for teams that aren't successful, because that's it. Like, if you're, they don't get mad at you if you suck in LA. They don't give a damn.
Sure,
and that's like that's almost worse.
Do you? I mean, there's a good possibility that most LA fans don't even know the Rams are there
right.
yet.
Well, and that was kind of the funny thing coming up with it as we're prepping for this interview, so to speak, trying to figure out questions. Like, not that I'm doubting Lindsay's reporting acumen,
sure.
But we're talking about a team that has been in town for a matter of months and has been on public display for a matter of days. How far deep can you get?
Yeah.
And like, where do you go?
It's off the, I mean, off the field is as if not more interesting. I mean, there's a couple of decent storylines. Obviously, Jared Goff there and Jeff Fisher. Is he a good coach or is he one of the more overrated coaches of all time?
The only reason Jeff Fisher's not fired is because he was able to pull a trade for a high pick and a quarterback.
Yeah.
I mean, that dude, think about how much. She said it. They haven't had a winning season in 13 years.
Sure.
Right? Jeff Fisher's, like, he's the one that's responsible for that. And, like, by going in with Sam Bradford for way too long and then Nick Foles for a little bit, like, I had a feeling he went in this offseason and was on thin ice. It was like, hey, just give me a project quarterback.
You know why I think Jeff Fisher hasn't been fired, honestly, and I don't think you're wrong. I think a big part of it, too, is we were talking about Jed York and how he doesn't care because he's making cash.
Mm-hmm.
Stan Kroenke.
Oh, man.
Stan Kroenke has such a huge empire when it comes to sports teams. I think as long as he's been focused on moving him to L.A., doesn't really care.
That's a great point because they didn't have to do anything different with the team, and his business got bigger.
He made a lot of money, and I hope he gave Jerry Jones a piece of whatever the money he made because Jerry's a huge reason why those Rams are in L.A. right now. So there's the Rams. We will have I'm sure, be an extremely lively conversation with Dave Softy Mahler of KJR in Seattle tomorrow. And it sucks because we don't really have any ammo. He's going to come on and talk about the Seahawks. He's going to drop a bunch of bombs on the 49ers, and what are we going to do? Argue? They're horrible. And I hate taking it from him.
You just have to, though.
We'll just throw out, you know, like, well, you know, so are you going to go to any Sonics games this year? Something like that. They got to throw something out there to fight back with.
And enjoy the Robert Turbin era.
Yeah, exactly. Good luck there, pal. So we'll do that tomorrow as we keep going through the NFC West. When we come back, a guy named Benjamin Hill, you say, who the hell is Benjamin? What are you doing? He's got the greatest assignment in the world. He's going around for MILB.com. That's the minor league baseball part of MLB.com. And he's touring ballparks. He started in Raleigh Field. I'm interested to get his grade and see what's ahead of him as well. He'll join us next. We'll have a little bit of fun on The Drive, Sports 1140 KHDK. You know, we do have a minor league baseball team that we all know and love here in town, the Sacramento River Cats. One of the reasons I love Twitter is you get exposed to things you may not know about. I saw Ben Hill tweeting about his latest assignment. Now, he is a writer for MILB.com. You can get him at Ben's Biz, B-I-Z. And he's got an assignment that I think many of us would pay to do. He's touring minor league ballparks, and he started right here in Sacramento at Raleigh Field. He's nice enough to check in with us because I really wanted to check in with him right now. It's Ben Hill. Ben, I'm Dave. That's Nate. How are you?
Hey, guys. I'm doing well.
Hi.
Thanks for having me on.
Mo, our pleasure. Where are we at right now in the Ben Hill worldwide, or at least America-wide tour of minor league parks?
Right now, I'm in a hotel in Modesto, California.
Ooh.
I started this trip in Sacramento and then was in Stockton last night and drove right to Modesto, and I'm seeing the Modesto Nuts tonight.
Modesto Nuts, partially owned by Kings partial owner Andy Miller, as a matter of fact. So there you go. And I've actually been to a Nuts game before. It's a fine experience. You started at Raleigh Field. Your thoughts on your experience with our very own River Cats?
Oh, that's a beautiful ballpark. I'd never been there before. And that's one of the things I like about traveling around minor league ballparks is you can go to a AAA ballpark like Sacramento, one of the best in the country in terms of how much you guys draw and all the amenities. But then you can go to, you know, Modesto, which only fits maybe a quarter of that number of fans. And you see a lot of diversity even without having to travel very far.
Now, do you have a full itinerary planned out yet, or are you just kind of going as you see it? What's the story there?
Well, I have an itinerary for this trip. But in a larger context, I've been writing about minor league baseball since 2005 and slowly kind of developed this niche of exploring America through minor league baseball and the business and culture of minor league baseball. And so now each season I do three or four trips and I just hit a region and, you know, hit the road for a week or 10 days. And at this point, I've been to about 145 ballparks and trying to hit them all.
So I guess then, is this kind of one of those similar things where you're just doing like a Western region, or how is this schedule in particular working? A new ballpark daily? What's the breakdown?
Yeah, it's basically daily. At this point, because I'm trying to hit every single ballpark, there's 159 ballparks in affiliated minor league baseball. So now that I made it out west this time, I hadn't been to Sacramento before. I hadn't been to San Jose before. So I really make sure to hit the places I haven't been. And then I do repeats when I have to, because it doesn't hurt to visit places again. So, yeah, I'll be in Modesto tonight and San Jose tomorrow and Visalia on Friday, and then over to Vegas and Reno, and then up into the Northwest League with Boise and the Tri-City Dust Devils and Spokane Indians. So it's a whirlwind.
So what's the longest trip between then? I mean, it sounds like you're going from far down south, like up to Northwest pretty quickly. What's the most amount of travel between ballparks?
Well, I give myself a quote-unquote off day if it's more than a six-hour drive, because once you add food and gas and whatnot to that, it becomes closer to 8 hours. And so I'll have a day off between Vegas and Reno. But I'll travel up to 350 miles in a day. And but it's nice, too, when the teams are close, like Sacramento to Stockton to Modesto. And on my last trip, I visited the Appalachian League in Tennessee, and I was able to stay in the same place for 5 days because those teams are so close to one another.
Ben Hill writes for MILB.com, covers minor league baseball. So you mentioned 150-plus affiliated baseball clubs. Do you have in your head how many you have left before you've gotten them all?
You know, I got to update the list at the end of the year, because I've been to some parks that are no longer around. But I think at the end of this year, I will have only 13 teams left to visit that I haven't. And so I've been, and there's 159 ballparks, and I've been to some that are no longer around. So I think by the end of the season, my tally will be probably over 150 ballparks.
Obviously, I'm biased because I'm in Sacramento, and I love anything Sacramento. But RiverCats and Out Here aside, one of the reasons this interested me so much, everyone's seen Bull Durham. We all have our dream of what the minor league life is like. And I really want to go see the minor league experience in the Carolinas, in Tennessee, in that part of the world where it just seems, I don't know what, for lack of a better term, where the purity of baseball is still in full effect. You've been there. Is there a region, is there an atmosphere you prefer that stands out over the others? And are there pockets of this country where you still have that you could go back and it's the same now as it was probably in the 60s or 70s?
Well, if you want the throwback feel, then I think you're better off not necessarily in a region of the country, but at the lower levels of play, the rookie levels. So there's the Pioneer League, which is more in Idaho and Montana and pretty remote, and the Appalachian League, where I just was. You know, there, that's the lowest level of minor league baseball. There you go to Bristol, Virginia, and there's a team that doesn't have a single full-time employee, and they're community run, and it costs $4 to get in, and it's a true throwback feel. And you mentioned the Carolinas, and that is a great region, because there are places like Durham, which no longer has the Durham Bulls, or the Bull Durham movie feel, but they have one of the best ballparks in AAA, kind of like Sacramento, and right in the warehouse district. You get to see how the city has changed and converted these old tobacco buildings into new things. So that's one of the reasons I do this job, too, is you get to see not just the team, but you get to see how the team relates to the city in which it plays, and the personality of the city. And, you know, minor league baseball is a great way to contextualize American travels.
Ben Hill, writing for MILB.com. I was going to say MILB.com. MILB.com, exploring America through minor league baseball. Ben, what is the craziest thing you've seen that would be unique to minor league baseball, whether it's a promotion, contest between innings, whatever it might be, something unique to minor league baseball?
There's so many that it blends together. And sometimes when I'm asked this question, I just go back to the first ballpark I ever visited. Because one of the reasons this job developed for me is I was writing about, you know, promotions and the crazy things that teams do to get people into the ballpark, because they have no control over the product on the field. That's controlled by the Major League Club, as you know. So the first time I ever got in a car and went to a ballpark, it was to go to Altoona, Pennsylvania, for their annual Awful Night promotion. And the whole gist of the promo is to make everything as awful as possible. So there's intentional misspellings on the video board. They had a shirtless guy, singing a falsetto, take me out to the ball game at the seventh inning stretch. They were selling spam. and all sorts of disgusting foods, and they gave sporks to fans as the giveaway item when you walked in. And
that's great.
That's really the kind of sensibility that got me into this job. The idea that, you know, you've got 70-some games a year, you don't control the product over the field, you've got to be creative, and so maybe that's not the all-time craziness, but that, I think, captures the spirit that you just do. You just try something, you throw it at the wall and see what sticks. So it's a really funny universe.
Which is what I think is so attractive about minor league baseball beyond everything else is you do anything to get butts in seats. And speaking of that, you know, if you've seen Bull Durham or if you've been to minor league games back in the 80s, you know who the clown prince of baseball was, Max Patkin. I'm curious, there will never be another Max, ever, ever, ever. You see anything that even approaches that anymore, or we just moved on to other things?
Well, certainly not someone like Max specifically. There's been a guy named Myron Noodleman who has a nerd persona, who has kind of taken on that that mantle, you know, with the pocket protector and the glasses, but he runs around and interacts with fans and does physical comedy. I'd say in terms of touring acts, the superstars who you've probably come across at some point, you know, the big inflatable animals with the pun names like Ken Giraffe Jr. and Harry Canary. They are huge with their dance routines. You know, Clammy Sosa. They do the one where the clam swallows a player and then
yes.
spits him out only in his boxer shorts. So that's those kind of touring characters, I think, are at the forefront right now. But you do see some of that old-time stuff, you know, guys getting shot out of cannons or running the bases while on fire. You still see some of that vaudeville atmosphere in minor league baseball.
Ben, we appreciate your time. Saw you online. This is an assignment and a job I think a lot of people listening right now would love to be doing. And as a guy who has – I have personally – taking a tour of the country before in 30 days in about 28 cities. So I understand that there are times when you're probably in the car going, God, I am so freaking tired. There, of course, there's downsides to everything, but I'm assuming you stop every once in a while and go, wow, I am a lucky, lucky dude.
Well, you couldn't put it any better, because on the road, you know, when you're dealing with getting lost and malfunctioning hotel toilets
yep.
and all sorts of, you know, bad internet connections and just deadlines, you know, you go nuts, but no doubt being able to visit so many different places, you know, see the whole world or the whole country through minor league baseball and really do something I love is a dream come true. And you're right, throughout the stress, and there is a lot on the road, there's a lot of moments where you just hear that song on the radio or you walk into the ballpark or whatever it is, you just stop and say, like, you know, it doesn't get much better than this, baseball and road trips and exploring this country.
You can follow Ben's exploits at Ben's Biz, B-I-Z, on Twitter. It's Ben Hill, writer for MILB.com. Have an absolute blast. Good luck to you, and thanks for joining us, man. It's a great story.
Hey, guys. Thanks a lot. I appreciate you having me on.
All right. That
thanks,
is,
Ben.
That's Ben Hill. That's
wondering if he was going to credit the originators of Awful Night.
Or
as we know it in Sacramento, the Maloof era.
Oh, wow. Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Mm-hmm, 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 mm-hmm,
wow.
It's a great idea, though, isn't it?
I love that idea.
It's just wonderful.
I absolutely love that idea.
You give them sporks as the giveaway?
Yes!
That's so stupid.
Spam and misspelling names. Are you kidding? I it's so great about minor league baseball is they will try pretty much anything legal.
What is the dumbest thing we can do? I don't know. Let's do everything dumb. Right. What? Love it.
Oh, we'll take a break. We'll wrap the show up next with a couple of Olympic updates, including stranded Nigerians and spoiled American basketball players. It's a great contrast of a couple of stories coming out right now. We'll let you know which next on The Drive, Sports 1140 KHTK. Oh, ball so hard. Dave, Nate, Katie on vacation. She'll be back Monday. Matt Georging. A lot of stuff to get to before we finish up here. Nate, right now at auction, you could bid as an absentee bidder online for the Fight of the Century fight-worn gloves worn by Muhammad Ali versus Joe Frazier in 1971.
Whoa.
Would you care to take a guess at what the current bid is at?
Can you give me a number of figures?
6.
15,000.
6, that's 5.
Whoops.
meant a zero in front of the 13.
1,500.
Uh-huh. 150,000?
Good Lord,
minimum
yes.
bid was 250. The current bid, $340,000.
Wow.
Which I'll tell you something. It's
more than 15,000.
A little bit. Too bad the Nigerian Olympic soccer team isn't holding this auction because they're on their way to the Olympics, which opened Friday, and they're currently stuck in Atlanta. Why? Is it weather? Is it mechanical? Nope. It's because they haven't paid their bill to their charter airline.
Ooh, whoops.
They open up play against Japan on Friday, and it's Wednesday, and they're now expected to land less than 36 hours before the team takes the field. According to a source, the money paid by the sports ministry for the charter flight did not hit the airline's account on Tuesday, so they refused to fly the team to Brazil.
This is the soccer team, you say?
This is the soccer team.
Wasn't there something, like now I'm trying to find this and it's going to be really hard to, but I want to say it was them or some other soccer team that was dealing with the FIFA corruption kind of big time recently during a tournament where their players basically weren't getting paid.
Yes.
Because this money, yes. like in this case, probably the airline didn't get paid, like not because they don't have the money, but because it's in somebody's pocket.
Yes. Not exactly uncorrupted. Now, here's what's interesting, and I don't know if this ties in or anything or not, but I see this story and I kind of, the pit in my stomach grew. I got an email last night from somebody in Nigeria, weirdly enough. Apparently, I didn't even know an uncle that passed away.
Right.
And I've got like $1.2 million waiting for me. Mm-hmm. So what I'm thinking is it's kind of a way to pay back the Nigerian guy who's doing this for me, he's brokering this deal. So I got to send him like my name, my address,
right.
my bank account number so he can deposit in there some credit cards and name my firstborn. But when I get that money,
you can just donate it straight across to them.
Why not?
Just tell them to give it to his buddies.
Why not? Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm even going to be back at work on Monday.
Right.
$1.2 million is a lot of money.
It's a lot. You could get him to Rio and take your own cut.
Thanks, Uncle. I didn't know. Appreciate that. On the other side, the USA basketball men's and women's national teams, they will not be complaining about the Olympic Village and how crappy the rooms are because, and we've reported this before, they're staying aboard Silver Seas' Silver Cloud cruise ship, docked in Guanabara Bay off the coast of Rio de Janeiro. This is a 296-passenger cruise ship, 514 feet in length, 71 feet across. That's enough to align five basketball courts in a row and still have plenty of room.
What was the length there?
It was 514 feet long, 71 feet wide. The living areas range from up to 1,300 square feet. And if you want to stay, for example, they normally employ a 222-person crew to deal with guests. You could stay in Kyrie Irving's room. They're going from Monte Carlo to Barcelona. That's the next time this ship will be open to the public. $6,400 for the starting price for that package. But my goodness, they have bars, they have pools, they have panorama lounges.
I'm just saying, things are so bad in Rio that they're much better off staying on a 500-foot porta-potty.
Seriously. Without a freaking doubt. That's it. Thanks to everybody who participated today. Picked up the slack for the vacationing. Katie, Matt, George, Nate Goodyear, I'm Carmichael Dave. We look at the Seattle Seahawks next, amongst other things, tomorrow. Exactly right. We'll be back at 6 a.m. Enjoy your broadcast day on your home for the best live and local coverage of the National Football League. Sports 1140 KHDK.